Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to our interview series, episode number 220. And I'm really excited to have on Mr. Sharman White, the head boys basketball coach at Pace Academy in Georgia. But also along with that, he just got done coaching the McDonald's All-American game a couple of weeks ago, the Nike Hoop Summit. He's the USA basketball, U16 and U17 coach?
Yes, sir.
Yep.
Okay. Just say junior national team.
Yep, junior national team. So other than that, Coach White has nothing on his plate. He is bored out of his mind. He has nothing going on in his life. That is a big set of sarcasm right there. So, we're excited to have Coach White on here tonight. But before we get to Coach White, of course, we want to thank our founding sponsor, Cosette Chiropractic, located at 144th and Maple here in Omaha. Coaches, if you or any of your athletes are struggling with balanced neck or spinal issues and you're in the Omaha area, go check out Dr. Kevin or Dr. Heidi. Give them a call, 402-964-0300. Follow us on Twitter at A Pen and a Napkin. We try to put out daily coaching tidbits on the Twitter handle, so be sure to follow us there. If you're listening, iTunes, Spotify, whatever it may be, like, rate, give us 5 stars, write a good review, say nice things about A Pen and a Napkin, but because when folks look up coaching podcasts, the better reviewed ones with more comments and all that fun stuff, they move up to the top, which means more people get exposed to A Pen and a Napkin, which would be really cool. So, and of course, if you have any questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me, apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Sharman White. The man of many titles right now. I'm just going to call him the head boys basketball coach at Pace Academy for this segment of the podcast. And we might shift that if that's all right with you, Coach. You know, you can kind of play that chameleon type of thing, I guess. So, Coach, how you doing, man? It's been a whirlwind of the last couple, 2-3 weeks or so.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on. I mean, like I said, I'm a big fan of this Pen and a Napkin. And I just, you know, I've been able to gather a lot of great things just from that, and so just to be on here is truly an honor, and so thank you for having me on here.
Well thanks for coming on. We've been trying to work together for a couple of weeks here, and I know how busy you've been, so I want to respect your time, because like I said, I know how chaotic everything's been has been going, or what's been going on here. So Coach, let's just get started here, like we normally do for folks that are unfamiliar with you, that they don't know about your basketball journey. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you've ended up in this place in your basketball journey.
You know, I'm a born and raised from Decatur, Georgia. It's a, you know, small suburb of Atlanta, Georgia. And I've been in basketball all my life. Didn't play a whole ton, but played some. And when I graduated from college, I wanted to be a coach. I knew I wanted to be a coach. I was coaching little kids when I was, like, in my teens and younger ages. I was coaching kids in my neighborhood, just doing it. But I knew I wanted to do it, and I got a lot of nephews. And so I'm always trying to, you know, teach them different things. But I knew I wanted to teach. And so it was a perfect blend of being able to teach and being able to coach, which led me to where I am now. And so, you know, fresh out of college, I started coaching middle school basketball. I did that for 6 years, and then I got a high school position here in Atlanta at Carver High School, where, you know, it was a program that had won 3 games a year before I got there, and they just had fallen on hard times. It was a historic program, but they had fallen on hard times, and I kind of ended up there kind of out of circumstance. It wasn't, I had not planned to go there or anything, but it just kind of popped open, and I was told by a couple of my mentors it was a good place to, you know, kind of cut my teeth. And so I went there, and believe it or not, my first year we went 11-17. But the caveat to that was we came within 2 games of winning the state championship. And so it kind of started my career as a high school coach. And, you know, it kind of went from there. And my third year at Carver, we actually went to the state championship, and we lost in the state championship game. And after that game, I fielded a lot of calls from different schools and county systems that wanted me to come and, you know, hit their program. And so out of the ones that were, you know, asking me to come, I decided to go to Miller Grove, which was in Lithonia, Georgia, which is a part of the DeKalb County school system. And it was a brand new school, you know, and I thought that it would be great for me to be able to start a program from scratch. After, you know, doing 3 years at Carver, where I kind of inherited a program where I had to kind of take what was there and try to make it what it was, and which we did, but be able to start a program with a foundation of which to my liking and the way I want to do it was an even greater challenge and a greater opportunity, I felt like. And so I took the challenge on and went to Miller Grove, and, you know, we in 3 years' time, you know, we made our first state playoff appearance, and in the third year, we went to the state. We went to the Final Four, and we lost in the Final Four. And then after that, we went to the state championship, and we won. We reeled off six straight state championships in a row, which was a Georgia State record for boys basketball. And we ended up, by the time I left Miller Grove, we had won 7 out of 8. And I left Miller Grove to take a opportunity to go coach college, which was at Georgia State. And it was, I had been offered other college opportunities prior to that in the past. And I just felt like Georgia State just felt right. And it was I felt like it was safe because I didn't have to relocate. I didn't have to take my kids out of school they're in.
Yep.
I didn't have to move. And I knew every coach in Georgia just about. And so I could go to any gym and be able to recruit and be able to, you know, find kids that would fit what we needed at Georgia State. And so I did that. I did it for 2 years. And I learned a lot, worked on the run. Hunter, great coach. We made it to the NCAA tournament during my tenure there. Signed a lot of kids from the Georgia area. But it was just, I just didn't, at the end of the day, I just was not fulfilled the same way I was when I was coaching high school. Because, I mean, anybody knows, college basketball is a business, and it's not the same, you know, it's not the same pure effect that you would have if you coached at a high school. And I had the experience of coaching at a high school and seeing kids go from point A to point B and being able to, you know, guide them along the way and be able to mentor them and, you know, just the purity of it. And so I missed that. I also missed the fact that I was missing a lot of my kids, my own kids, what they were doing, because I was always on the road recruiting or, you know, traveling for games or what have you. And I value that time with them. And so I decided, you know, that I probably want to look back at going to, you know, to the high school level. And you know, just so happened that Pace was in the market for looking for a coach. And I was able to land a position at Pace, and where I'm the associate athletic director and I'm the head boys basketball coach. And I've been able to win 3 state championships in 4 years there. I've been there a total of 6. And it's been a great ride there. I enjoy it thoroughly. My kids go to school there. So it's just been a win-win all around. It's great people there. And I've been fortunate enough also to be a part of USA Basketball, which I've been doing since 2013 with Coach Showalter and a lot of other great coaches. You know, Sean Ford and Jim Tuohy, who run USA Basketball, they believed in me enough to be able to sign me to become the junior national team head coach for U16, U17s, and this would be my 4th stint with it. And I've just been, you know, I'm blessed, and I don't take it for granted, but that little $20 basketball has did wonders for me as a coach and as a person.
Yeah. Let's backtrack a little bit here, Sharman. Let's go back to Miller Grove. Not only are you starting as a head coach, or you're the head coach there, you're hired to be the head coach, and you're taking over a program. There is no program to take over. Like you said, it was kind of appealing for you at the time. You were really excited about it. You know, kind of just let's dive deeper a little bit into that. What was that process like for you? What do you think were the 2, 3, 4-ish whatever number it may be, the two or three, four important steps that it took to not only build the program, but, you know, obviously, like I said, you're building it from scratch. You're establishing traditions. You're literally ordering the first uniforms. You can still smell the new paint when you came out for the first home game, I'm sure. You know, all of those different things. So when you took over this massive project, what were some of the things that you prioritized in order to try and get things going in the direction that you wanted it to?
Well, I wanted culture first and foremost. I wanted our guys to understand. I wanted, you know, anybody that comes through the door of that program to understand that it was going to be about hard work and commitment, you know, and competing. And, you know, I wanted to lay that foundation and be able to have young men be able to understand that you're part of something that's going to be really, really special. Of course, we didn't know the amount of success that we end up having, that we were going to have that in the first, but we wanted to strive for that type of excellence. And so I wanted to build a culture first. And so it started with, you know, that first group. And I remember a lot of the kids from that first group, you know, and I still, you know, keep in contact with those guys, and I go to their weddings. I go to their, you know, when they have children, you know, so we're still connected. And, you know, they are the ones that trailblazed it, you know, as far as like believing in what it was that we wanted to get done. And so everybody that came through the door after them, you know, they saw what was done before them, and they, you know, followed it with you know, the same type of you know, they wanted to be just as good or better. And so when we started winning and we started being successful and we started winning championships, it was like every year we won a championship, the next group that came on, you know, they were faced with the task of trying to keep it going. Mm-hmm. And I think that type of healthy competition and that type of healthy, you know, desire made for us to continue the success that we had. And it made it so that the culture stayed in place throughout, you know. So every year when new guys came in or freshmen, and, you know, they knew that, hey, we got to keep this thing going.
Mm-hmm. What were a couple of the really important culture pieces that you felt like that you put into place that kick-started all of this?
I mean, we did, like I said, we talk about hard work, commitment. Like, we would have early morning practices. That was one of the things that really, I felt like it was a, you know, thing that I had done in the past that was really successful for a lot of different reasons. But we had early morning practice. A lot of those kids had never, they didn't know what an early morning practice meant. Mm-hmm. But being able to get them up in the morning and practice, you know, early morning, or whether it was workouts, practice, what have you, it made them more disciplined. Mm-hmm. Because if you know you got to get up and be at practice, you know, we say it starts at 6, but we believe that early is on time. So they knew they had to be there before 6 and ready to go. And so, you know, they, by us doing it early, they knew they had to go to bed early. They knew they had to get their things out ready for school the next day. They knew all of this. And what that did was it made for them to be more disciplined. And they had to manage their time better after school. And, like, so if you got an early morning work or early morning practice, you know, after school you didn't have anything. So it gave you time to kind of, like, you know, take care of your schoolwork and make sure you do things like that. But those type of things set the culture, you know, and it kind of made it so that, you know, when guys came after the guys that started that, they knew it was something that it wasn't no discussion or no debate about whether they were going to do it or not. You know, they knew they had to prepare themselves for it. And I think that's what culture is. I think culture is about, you know, setting a standard and saying, okay, the standard is the standard. Mm-hmm. And that's what made it successful. So, again, it was a lot of things that went into that. And I'm not just talking about early morning practices, but I'm also talking about, you know, being diligent in their academics, being diligent in any off season or anything we did with according to strength training. And they were just, it just kind of flowed throughout the whole program and every facet of it. And so, again, it was just, you know, a great opportunity to be able to do that from scratch. That's the way I looked at it.
Mm-hmm. It seems like, and I don't know how you did this all the way from Georgia to Nebraska, Sharman, but I think you're looking over my shoulder. You've built, as I did my research for this, you built a culture, an environment, a bit of a brotherhood, and having that strong connection with your players and the commitment that you have to your kids and what your kids and your alums have to your program. You know, is that something that just has always come naturally to you, or is there some things that you kind of had to teach yourself and really emphasize or keep in mind as you tried to create that type of environment?
Well, I think it starts from my home life. I'm a family person. I grew up in a family, and, you know, we've always been, you know, a tight-knit group. And I think that's where it started at. You know, I grew up in a neighborhood where it was a tight-knit neighborhood where, you know, if I was out there doing something that I wasn't supposed to do, it didn't take my parents to have to be the ones to correct me. Somebody in the neighborhood would correct me, and it was great, and it was, you know, it was understood and it was respected by all parties. And so just that aspect of it, you know, I was able to have that, you know, and use that as a point of like how I go about how I coach and how I build a brotherhood or how I build a team and how you build camaraderie and how you build a family. You know, it's amazing to see like the players that I've coached from Miller Grove, from Carver, from Georgia State, and even now at Pace, how they all are connected, you know, in some type of way because of the affiliation with what they've been able to experience and what I, you know, as a coach, I've been able to try to blend. And they all, when we, like, I celebrated my 500 victory this past season. And to see all the kids from different teams and different programs that I've been a part of that were a part of it and that showed up to be a part of it was amazing. And it was really life-changing for me because you realize how important that is and how important things like family and building is. Mm-hmm. And I think our you know, like, our society needs to see more of that kind of stuff because, you know, again, me being disciplined or corrected by somebody in the neighborhood, if you do that now, it's a different game.
Yeah.
You know, and back then it was like well respected, and my parents, they appreciated that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it just helped me become the type of coach I am. Mm-hmm. When it comes to building a team, building culture, building family, building values, building habits. Mm-hmm. And I think those things make a big difference.
Coaches, get signed up today for the 4th annual A Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. This year's clinic will take place on Saturday, April 27th at the AEF Basketball Academy facility located at South 99th Circle and Portal Road in La Vista, Nebraska. We've got a great lineup of speakers, starting out with three on-court demonstrations. Justin Carter, former Creighton basketball player and owner and operator and founder of ProVision Basketball here in Omaha. He's going to do some essential skills and drills for player development. Dave Hubert, the head girls basketball coach at Ashland Greenwood High School, is going to do defensive principles and drills. Mark Sfigera, the head men's basketball coach at my alma mater, the Harvard of the Heartland, Briarcliff University. Great offensive mind, and he's going to talk about offensive basketball. One of the great things that we do at a Pen and a Napkin Clinic is we have our classroom sessions during our lunches. We've got three great speakers to come in this year to talk during our lunches. Jim Simons, the head boys basketball coach at Omaha Westside, is going to talk about using the three-point shot. Andy Gerlez, my good friend G, going to talk about building a program foundation and practice principles from Papillion-La Vista South. And Tyler Bird, the Think Shrink, you heard him on the podcast a few weeks ago. He's going to talk about mental health for coaching and keeping balance in your coaching life. And then we're going to have two breakout sessions. That's probably the thing that makes a pen and a napkin clinic the most unique thing, is you're going to sit around and you're going to talk with random coaches about random topics and pick the brains of random coaches that are going to be there for the clinic. Along with that, once the clinic is done, perhaps the best part of the clinic, I don't know, there's a lot of good things about the clinic, is our post-clinic social. And that's going to be at Wine 121, located at 120th and Center here in Omaha. Just $15 per coach if you want to attend that. Again, it's all about the coaches, and I try to keep it really, really affordable. This year, for one coach, for over 7 hours worth of stuff, $50. That's about $7 an hour to get great information. Two coaches from a staff, $90 or $45 a piece. Three coaches from the same staff, $120, so $40 a piece. If you have four or more coaches from your staff, that's $35. That's $5 an hour that you're going to pay for your whole staff to have a great day of knowledge and learning things. So if you're interested in signing up for the clinic, look for our flyer on Twitter, or you can email me, apenandanapkin@gmail.com. You can DM me on Twitter. Registrations are due Thursday, April 25th. Have to do that for the lunch count and make sure that we're taken care of there. But coaches, you will not regret signing up for the fourth annual A Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. Do that today. You made the decision to leave Miller Grove, and you went to Georgia State. You did the Division I college thing for a couple of years. And a lot of people would think from the outside looking in, hey, this is the natural step. This is where you go from here. Wouldn't that be great? But like you said, you kind of made the, courageous is the wrong word, but you kind of took the road less traveled. You said, no, this isn't quite for me. And you talked about how, family commitments and not feeling as fulfilled, so forth and so on. What were, though, on the other side of that, Sharman, what were a couple of big things that you learned while you were at Georgia State that you now apply at Pace, at USA Basketball, so forth and so on?
I think, before I got to Georgia State, I thought I was really good at preparation. I thought I was pretty good. I thought that's why I thought we were successful for the most part. You got to have good players too. So I'm not oblivious to that. But, I really learned what preparation was about when I got to the college level. It went to another level. The depth of preparing for teams, and when you're assigned a scout, and how important every detail is, and how you can't leave no stone unturned, and things of that nature. And so when I had to do it at such a high level in the college game, and it worked out really well. Like I said, we won a lot of games, and we went to the NCAA tournament, and I was part of all that, and I had a big part of that. We won a conference championship, the Sun Belt, in 2018, and I had two scouts during that tournament, including the quarterfinals and the finals, and I felt like I had a big part of that. And just the preparation part of it was big. And so when I went back to high school, it was like almost like my level of knowledge for preparation and being able to prepare for an opponent once you get the scouting, all the film and the analytics part of it, which I was learning at Georgia State with Sports Code and Synergy and all that stuff. And when I took it back to the high school level, it just made a tremendous amount of difference about how we were able to go in. And I probably overachieved my first couple of years at Pace because of the fact that, we were able to be better than what we were because of the preparation, mm-hmm. And knowing what we needed to do in order to secure wins and be able to stop the team from doing what it is that they want to do to be successful. And so I took so much from that. And then just the experiences of, going and traveling and playing on the road in hostile environments. And, you got to get your guys mentally ready to do that and be able to, figure out how you're going to come out of there with a win, how you go steal a win on the road and things of that nature. It was priceless. But like I said, at the end of the day, it was so many, things that I was missing that I really, really valued. And I always tell people, you know, I'm chasing greatness. I'm not chasing dollars.
Yeah.
I feel like if I chase greatness, the dollars will chase me. And so I've always felt like that. And, you know, I'm not, you know, living on a lifestyle of the rich and famous, but I feel like I've had a good life and I've impacted a lot of lives, which means a lot to me, more so than every bit of, you know, money I could ever make.
See, that's where you and I differ, Sharman. I got into education because of the money. Sorry, bad teacher joke. I apologize.
All good,
people.
Man.
So,
all good.
You know, kind of the as you took all that stuff at Georgia State, approximately. It's always a question of translation. What can you, like, if you're a pro coach and you go to the college level, how much of all the stuff that you do at the professional level, how much can you really bring that to the college level and have it translate and function at the collegiate level? Same thing when you're going from college level to high school level. So approximately when you're talking about those details, the preparation, the scout, the analytics, you know, you can't bring everything that you had at Georgia State, but approximately what percentage of that do you think you've been able to bring that to Pace?
You know what? I've been able to bring quite a bit because of the way you have to kind of adapt and try to figure out what will fit and what will. But I think also that if I'm preparing kids to go play college basketball, those that want to play college basketball.
Exactly.
I think you got to hold them to a standard that they got to reach up to.
Exactly.
And so that's what I've done. And I think that's part of our success, too, because, you know, when I got there, you know, when looking at the team we started with, there's no way we could play the style I wanted to play based on what I, you know, had done previously. But I said, you know what, I'm going to try to put a standard in front of them. And if you do that with kids, you know, no matter what level, if you put something in front of them that's going to challenge them to put, most times, and I say most times, not all the time, they'll reach it. They'll at least make a valiant effort to reach it. And I think that's the difference between good and great programs. What you set for a standard and what you set for how things are going to be done and how things need to be done in order to be successful. And that's what that's what I've been able to do. I challenge every one of my teams, to be the best they can be. But not only that, I challenge them to be, you know, better than even that. Because if you challenge them to be better than the best they can be, you know, even if you fall short, you're doing pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And I never take that for granted.
Yeah. Well, I think that's interesting you say that about bringing that into the high school game. I know sometimes I coached small college ball for 6 years, and we were really good. And even at that level, you know, here's the preparation, here's what you need to do, here's the time commitment, here's the, you know, so forth. And you know, you tell kids, well, this is what it's like, this is what we're trying to prepare you for at our program. And they're like, well, I want to play college ball, but man, we do this too much. We do that too much. Okay, well, but you want to play college ball. This isn't even, we're just scratching the surface of what it's like at college ball. So if this is too hard for you here at the high school level, then you might want to reassess your commitment level and not so much a lot of times it's not the physical commitment. I don't know where you've been at, Sharman, but it's not so much the physical commitment, it's the mental commitment to it, whether that's the mental discipline to get the lifting in or to take the time to study the film, to watch, to understand how the concepts of the offense or the defense that you're putting in there. And I think that's such a great teaching point that you can sell on your program that, you know, here's what it's going to be like, or here's a good taste of what it's going to be like. It's not going to be exactly what it's going to be like, but you got to understand this. And if you can't hack it, then you got to take a good long look at yourself and decide what you want to do. Have you had to have that conversation with kids before?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's like a reality check.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's different with this generation now, because I think they're a little sensitive and they kind of, you know, try to figure out what's the easiest way to get through something. And it's not like they really want to, work to get it done. And you have to kind of like challenge them. And so I stay in challenge mode with our players, and not only with our players, but even when I go to USA Basketball, when I, you know, go to McDonald's, I challenge the kids to be even better than what they even think they can be, even though they, when you deal with McDonald's All-Americans and kids that play for, you know, Nike Hoop Summit or USA Basketball, those kids are, you know, predestined pros, pretty much.
Yeah.
And to be able to challenge them and get the maximum out of them, you just make them better. Uh-huh. You make them better as a person. You make them better as a player. You just, and they appreciate that. And I think, you know, it's something to be said for that, because if you don't do that and you play into the fact that they're talented and you play into the fact that they are really, really good basketball players, and you don't challenge them, you're not really helping them as much as you could. That's just my personal opinion.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of those kids here. Charmin, you're doing a great job of just leading me right into the next topic on my list. I feel like you set up a camera in here in my office. I'm not sure. So
yeah, I just wanted to make. I'm sorry that you figured it out.
it's not my first restraining order, so don't worry about it. So you know, but you know, how'd you get involved in the McDonald's game?
You know, I got a call from Terry Lynn Wooten, you know, and she said, "Hey, you've been selected to coach the McDonald's game." And in order to be selected, you had to be nominated. I didn't know who nominated me at the time, but I later found out, and it was a tremendous and unexplainable honor that, you know, as a coach, we all have seen that game for so long. We know how big that game is and how big the stage is. And to be able to, you know, check that off of the bucket list, so to speak, and be able to have an opportunity to coach in that game was truly, truly something that, you know, I still pinch myself to this day, you know, when I got that call and when I found out that I was going to be coaching that game. And it was... the experience was unlike any other, and I don't, you know, I'm still trying to like digest all that, you know, that was about and how that happened. And I'm just honored and blessed to be able to say I was able to do that. But by the same token, you know, sometimes you got to recognize the fact that you put in a lot of work and you do it the right way, and things happen in time. And, you know, that's the way I had to kind of like take it too. Like, you know, not as much as if I earned it, but I put myself in position to be in that space. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I can't put into words how great that was.
Mm-hmm. And then you rolled right into from the McDonald's game, which would be just a hell of a deal, and then you roll from there into the Nike Hoop Summit, and you're still coaching. You've even narrowed down the talent pool even more, where you've got about 12 of the best kids that the United States has to offer, and some names that some folks are going to be hearing a lot about over the next 15 to 20 years or so, you know. The whole Nike angle of it. I don't know. Did you get a chance to meet Phil Knight?
No, but nope. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to be with Nike for almost close to 20 years. And, you know, they've been great for me, and Tony Dorado and his group of people that work with us. It's been an awesome relationship. I'm Swiss for life. And for me to be able to coach in that game and be in Portland, Oregon, where it's the home base of Nike, mm-hmm. and be able to, you know, visit and tour a lot. And I've been in, you know, Portland on several occasions, but it never gets old to be able to go to, you know, the Michael Jordan building or the Tiger Woods building or the Serena Williams building or, you know, LeBron James building, and be able to see how everything kind of got its start from those, you know, individuals, and how Nike builds around them, and how they do all the things that make those brands continue to be, you know, high level and elite. And, you know, just to be able to coach in that game, I was scheduled to coach that game in 2020, but, and that was going to be a phenomenal group, which Evan Mobley and, you know, Scotty Barnes, those group, but, you know, it was COVID, so we didn't have the game. So, you know, just showing how USA Basketball operates and how they do it with first class and integrity, they made sure that I was able to coach that game at some point. Even though I've been coaching some of the junior national teams, they wanted to make sure I got a chance to coach that game. And so I was able, I'm fortunate enough to coach it this year and coach it with a really, really good group. Mm-hmm. And again, just blessed.
Mm-hmm. As I was watching the Nike game, I noticed you got pretty smart there in the second half where you left Cooper Flagg in for a lot of that second half there. That was pretty sharp there, Coach.
Well, he got foul trouble first half.
Oh,
he
okay.
picked up three fouls in the first half. And he picked up two early ones, and then he picked up a third one when I put him back in the second quarter. And, you know, that would not have been the plan just to leave him out of the game. But, mm-hmm. you know, you got to be wise as a coach. You need him for the long run. And, mm-hmm. you know, it wasn't just Cooper Flagg. We had a lot of other guys.
You had some horses. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
without a doubt.
So, like, you know, if they could just hold it in the middle of the road until we get him back. And that's the way we kind of looked at it. And we did. And when he got back, you know, he made an impact on the game, made his imprint on the game. But we also had a lot of contributions from other guys that made it.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, when he came back, it was just that much, we were that much more better.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a great experience. Had a really, really good group of players as well as a great coaching staff to go along with it. So it was a lot of fun. And just to be able to make sure that the world team didn't win, couldn't be better.
How do you keep the balance between your USA Basketball commitments and coaching your high school team?
The good part about with the USA Basketball, it comes at times when the high school basketball season is not revved up.
Mm-hmm.
So when we do our fall mini camp, it's in first weekend of October, and we're not practicing at that point. We're just doing workouts, so I'm not missing any type of practices or games. And then we do our spring mini camp, which is during the Final Four. Our season is over. You know, whether we win, lose, or draw, it's over. And, you know, I'm not missing quality time away from my team. And then in the summer, of course, when we do our FIBA tournaments, again, it's the summer, so I'm not missing the type of time I would be missing if it was during the season or what have you. So, you know, again, it's been great. I think USA Basketball is the best culture in basketball, period. I think the culture is better than NBA. I think it's better than college. Because, you know, when guys decide they want to represent their country, it's the amount of pride and the amount of respect that comes with that that makes it worth the while.
Mm-hmm. A Pen and a Napkin University videos are just another way that a pen and a napkin can help you become a better coach. Our university video library is constantly expanding with topics ranging from interviewing for a job to full court defense to 25 universal truths about coaching. Our university videos will help you round out your skill set as a coach and help you hone your craft. Videos are $10 a piece, with bundling options available. To order, you can DM me on Twitter, send me an email at apenandanapkin@gmail.com, or order from our website, apenandanapkin.com. Be sure to check out the A Pen and a Napkin video library. Sharman, let's switch gears here a little bit. At this time we jump into our John Wooden quote of the day here. So, are you ready, Coach White, for the John Wooden quote of the day?
Let's go.
All right. From Paige. Hold on a second. My eyes went out of focus here for this, the seasoned and experienced state that I'm in here. Every once in a while this happens. So, from page 54 of Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations, here is the John Wooden quote of the day. And it's a little bit of a longer one here, Sharman. I apologize. So I'll try to read it fairly slowly so you can kind of digest the whole thing. So, in my coaching, I informed every player who came under my supervision that the outcome of a game was simply a byproduct of the effort we made to prepare. They understood our destination was a successful journey, namely total, complete, and detailed preparation. Too often we neglect our journey in our eagerness or anxiety about reaching the goal.
I love that. I mean, it just talks about preparation, how you're able to be confident because of preparation. If you prepare, you're confident, and it puts the value on preparation. So I love that.
Yeah. Well, and it kind of goes back to, you know, you were able to win a couple of championships there at Pace based on your experiences on preparation that you had at Georgia State. And when kids see how that preparation pays off, it's so much easier to sell the preparation as well, you know, and you had alluded to that earlier. So, yeah, I think it's a really, really good one. It's weird, you know, it's amazing, Coach, how many times I picked out that quote like 2 weeks ago, and as we were talking here tonight, it fit in perfectly to what we've been chopping up. So Coach, let's get into your philosophy here a little bit. Let's basketball nerd it here in the second half. Let's start with baseline out of bounds plays, Coach. What do you like to do? What are some key concepts that you like to run? Obviously, I got to see you ran some terrific stuff in the Nike Hoop game. So I'll be honest, I stole a couple of them as I was watching it. So what are some things that you do? I'm just going to try and sit back, let you cook here. If I need to interrupt, I'll try to do so as politely as I can. But tell us a little bit about how you teach out of bounds plays, both offensively, and let's talk a little bit about it defensively as well, if you'd be willing to.
Yeah, well, baseline out of bounds, I think I treat it like special teams in football. You know, you're trying to get an advantage in an area that, you know, it's not, you don't do it, you know, 40 times a game, but those 7, 8, 9 times you do it, you try to get a percentage of where you can kind of like, you know, be able to gain an advantage, you know. And when I'm doing baseline out of bounds, it's about this deception a little bit because we want to have, you know, we might have, you know, box alignments, and we might do 4 different things out of that box alignment and try to keep our opponents, you know, off kilter, and so they can't figure out exactly what we're doing. But then I also want to be able to specialize it so that if we need a 3, we got a 3 play. If we need a 2, if we want to take advantage of, you know, a size mismatch or what have you, I think those types of things are what drives our baseline out of bounds plays. And just the fact that we want to be able to get a score, you know, what can give us the opportunity to score and score quick. You know, I usually don't do a lot of things where it just takes a long time to develop, meaning we might pass it in and then we go into an action and we go into another action. Usually it's like a quick action and we try to score out of it. Because if I was going to, you know, do something where it contains, you know, 4 to 5 actions, it's just like I'm really running a half court set, and I'm just trying to get the ball in to be able to run the half court set. Mm-hmm. So I try to make sure that, you know, for us, I like to score in a way where it's going to be more like a quick hit, or it's going to be more so where we know what we want and we know what we're trying to get, and we just got to execute it. So we use, you know, box alignments. We use, you know, 1-4 low. We do a 1-4 high. You know, we do different alignments, but we try to have more than one, you know, play from that alignment so that we can't have that area of deception. We can kind of like be able to keep teams off balance.
Typical season, by the time you get to tournament time, how many baseline out of bounds plays do you have in your repertoire that you feel pretty comfortable running on an average year? I know every year is different.
Oh my God. I probably have about like maybe 15 to 20 baseline out of bounds plays.
Holy wow.
Yeah. Wow. We run a lot of them. But again, now the caveat to it is that there are a lot of them in the same format or the same alignment. So it helps with that. You know what I mean? Like, so we might have 4 to 5 box alignment plays. We might have three to four, you know, whereas one four low or a four low, or we have, you know, three or four, you know, one four high, you know. And so by the time you do that, you've got quite a number of plays that you can be able to pick from, choose from, and it's a building process. And so, again, our guys, we've been fortunate enough to have guys that, you know, as you continue to go through the season, you add one here, you might add one for a game, just out of the blue, you might add one during an ATO, you know, and you just say, all right, we're going to do this. And, you know, you show them and they do it, and that's when you know you've got something where those kids can take something that you draw up in a timeout and be able to go execute it. But that comes from a lot of practice. But you have to practice it. You have to spend a lot of time. I think, you know, some people don't spend a lot of time baseline out of bounds because they don't feel like it's that important. But like I said, we treat it like it's special teams in football. So we work on it. We spend time on it every day. The amount of time we spend on it varies, but we spend some time on it, and you couple that into situations as well, so you kind of like killing two birds with one stone.
Mm-hmm. How much time each practice do you spend on it, Coach?
At least probably around 7 minutes. We break down our practices by minutes, so like everything has a time frame. We spend 5 to 7 minutes on baseline out of bounds every day. Just even if it's in the format of like situations, you know, we do situations every day as well. Whether it's, you know, baseline out of bounds situations, sideline out of bounds situations, full court situations, or even just game situations. You're down by six with, you know, a minute and a half left. So we kind of build it into that, and we kind of make it worth, you know, our while to be able to use it. But, you know, when our kids get in base, it was amazing. We went 24-5 this year. We lost in the second round to a really good team. But just kind of give you a little backstory on the game that we lost. We were in a situation where we could tie the game up. We didn't have any timeouts, but because we worked on different plays throughout the year, and we worked on different situations, our guys came to me as soon as the ball got deflected out of bounds, and we had like 5 seconds to, you know, run a baseline out of bounds play. I didn't even have to call it. It was like, hey, coach, we're going to go play A, for a better use of words. And they, you know, because they knew that play, we practiced it, and they felt like we had not ran it in the game. But just the fact that we practiced it and practiced it and practiced it, you know, it made for, so we're in a situation like that. You don't like to be in a situation with no timeouts. You don't want to be in that. But we were in that situation. And so our fortunes just were not good. We missed a shot, but we were able to do what we wanted to do without, you know, we had an opportunity. I'll say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Of those, let's say 15 plays, how many of those are carried over from season to season? You know, box one was box one last year and this year, and it'll be box one next year and the year after that. And how much of that do you do from scratch from year in, year out?
I'll say about half of them are carried over from previous year. But then when you see pen and a napkin and you see a deep little baseline out of bounds play, you know, you add that and you say, hey, man, look, we're going to do this, you know, and I'm not going to sit here and try to pretend like I'm just dialing up all these plays. But if I see that, and I think it's effective for us and it fits our personnel, I'm going to add that and we're going to put that into the vault.
Sorry about the temptation, Sherman.
It's all good.
I don't apologize for that. I'm glad I'm able to help you out a little bit. So, coaches are absolutely loving our taking over a new program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Let's jump into, let's talk a little transition offense and getting out and running your break and doing that type of thing here. What do you teach there at Pace, or and how do you implement it? Again, kind of the same thing here, Coach. Just what do you do? How do you do it? Maybe a drill or two that you use to really emphasize your transition offensive philosophy. And like I said, if I feel the need to interrupt, I'll try to do it as politely as I can. So talk to us a little bit about your transition offensive philosophy.
Well, we like to play in transition, whether it's, you know, my teams at Pace, whether it was my teams at Miller Grove, USA Basketball. I like to play in transition because I feel like it gives you a chance to put a lot of pressure on the defense and make them have to be, really, really good in getting back, which, you know, at the age level we coach, that's not something that is valued a whole bunch because of the fact that, you know, most times it stems from an offensive possession that didn't go well or didn't turn out the way it wanted to. And so we try to get, you know, we believe in a number break where we get our twos and threes out on the wing and they sprint to the corners. We get our five-man to run the rim. We get our four-man to make sure he's the one, if he's not rebounding or taking it out. And that can be interchangeable with the four and the five. And we got the point guard getting out in a deep outlet, and we're trying to push it. And if we can't get anything on the pitch ahead, we look to get it right into a drag screen from the trail guy who's usually the four man who takes it out or who's, you know, getting the rebound with his four or five, and we play out of it. And we try to teach our guys to play the game at that point. You know, you get into a situation where you get a drag screen and you want the drag screen for the advantage. You're trying to gain the advantage. And so you gain the advantage and then you teach them how to play out of it. Because, you know, we're not just teaching plays. We're trying to teach kids how to play. Mm-hmm. And so if they can be able to take a drag screen and use it and be able to gain the advantage and be able to make a play, that's one less set we got to concern ourselves with running. And so that's, you know, when we talk about transition and how we prepare for that, we do several drills where it incorporates, you know, once we teach our method of transition, you know, we do different things to try to go in and make sure that it's embedded in our players. And so one of the things we do progression drills where we start off with 2-on-1 and then it goes from 2-on-1 to 3-on-2 and from 3-on-2 to 4-on-3 and from 4-on-3 to 5-on-4 and from 5-on-4 to 5-on-5. And it teaches our guys how to take advantage of the advantage, but also teaches our guys defensively how to get back in transition D and be able to scramble until guys get back. And then we also do a disadvantage drill where we put five guys, you know, let's just say they'll be on defense. They'll be lined up across the free throw line, extended area, all the way from one sideline to the other. And then we'll put five guys on the baseline, and we'll have a coach, and he'll throw the ball into one of the guys on the baseline, which will be the offense. And we'll have the guy who he throws it to has to go touch the line. And it's a drill that everybody, you know, has done or it's been widely known. But it gives our guys a chance to be able to attack in transition, try to keep the advantage because you have the advantage by the defensive guys touching the line or one defensive guy touching the line. But then also defensively, it helps us to get back, get to the lane, point, communicate, scramble, and try to get back in transition defense until we can get back to 5-on-5. Mm-hmm. So we try to do drills that incorporate helping both sides of the basketball so we can coach both sides of the basketball because, yeah, we would love to be in transition every single chance we get, but other teams want to be in transition. Our opponent wants to be in transition too, and if we can't guard their transition, we're in trouble.
Yeah, yeah. Anytime, you know, as I became more seasoned and experienced, you know, the more we could work on offense and defense at the same time, that's what I really gravitated towards, you know, just because you got to be able to play both. Yeah, obviously, you know, and the more two-way players that you can develop, the easier it becomes for you as a coach. You're not situationally substituting. It makes you look a lot smarter when you've got those two-way players, don't you think, Coach?
Oh, absolutely, man. You know, I think, you know, it's when you think about two-way players, being a part of USA Basketball, I've been able to, really see a lot of things, but Sean Ford, our director, we had a, coaches meeting with him. I think he brought up a great point, and he kind of described what a two-way player is. It's an inability or it's a decision.
Gotcha.
And what that means is, either guys don't know how to, or they can make a choice to be a two-way player. And I think giving the kids that spectrum of, like, either you're not able to do it, which is a challenge in itself, or you're deciding to do it, which is a decision that needs to be made, is what makes up a two-way player.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Yeah, I'm sorry. Keep going.
Yeah, so that just, it just goes right into the fact that, you got different players that, that have a lot of potential but don't have a lot of performance. And those type of things, like being able to play both sides of the floor, which is what you're supposed to do. It's not like it's something that's a, some type of gimmick or something. You're supposed to be able to play both sides of the floor. That's just the way I look at it.
I think you're right. And not everybody can be Scottie Pippen on defense, and not everybody can be, Steph Curry on offense. But you could put forth the effort to try to make yourself the best defensive player that you can. And if you don't know how, you ask, you keep working at it, et cetera, et cetera. And same thing on offense. And I think that's, you bring up such a terrific point there. And I think that, players are naturally, most kids are going to do what you demand of them to do. And if you don't demand enough of them to max themselves out on everything that they do on both sides of the ball, then they're never going to be there. And one of the biggest responsibilities you have as their coach is to, you've got to push them to get them to that point where they have maxed out everything that they have. I think that's one of your greatest responsibilities as a coach, don't you think, Charmin?
Absolutely. coaching is more than a title. I tell a lot of young coaches that, you have a responsibility. And you have a responsibility to the game. And you have a responsibility as a teacher of the game. We always talk about growing the game and things of that nature. And, I always tell guys, you got to keep your blade sharp. And so as a coach, that's why, again, I look at a pen and a napkin and be able to, I'm trying to always keep my blade sharp. I never feel like I've learned enough. Back to John Wooden, he said, one of his quotes is, when you feel like you know everything, that's the day you need to retire. And, I'm not ready to retire yet by no means. But I try to, put myself in a position where I can just learn, and so I can be able to pass that on to our players and teach them how to play the game and be able to get, so they can get the most out of it. One of the things, we believe in sharing the ball, whether I'm coaching USA, whether I'm coaching Pace, whether I'm coaching Miller Grove, I've always believed in sharing the ball and ball movement and things of that nature. But one of the things that our guys that I feel like they responded to when I try to implement that into what we're trying to do is always say that the go-to man is the open man. Mm-hmm. I kind of catch him off guard with it. I say, who's the go-to man? You know, when you first put it out there, oh, I'm the go-to man. That's cute, but at the end of the day, the go-to man is the open man. And if you believe that, then it's about who's open, and that's how we'll figure out who's the go-to man. It might not be the same person every time, and it shouldn't be, but that gives us an idea how we want to play. Mm-hmm. And so just those type of things, just really, trying to teach this younger generation how to, not just teach them plays, but teach them how to play.
Mm-hmm. Let's wrap up with this here, Coach. Let's talk a little bit about shooting, some of your favorite shooting drills, what might be two or three of your favorite shooting drills, kind of your philosophy, how you coach shooters, so to speak. Just anything that you want to talk about with shooting here, Coach, just let it rip and let's go home on that.
I think shooting is such a big part of the game, and I don't think it should be designated to just guys that are hailing the ball all the time. I think shooting is something that needs to be important to every member of the team, because at some point they're going to have to shoot the basketball, whether it's a free throw, whether it's a mid-range jump shot. No matter what it is, you should never, ever undervalue the aspect of shooting. I try to get a lot of shooting in within practices because, we do a lot of time. We spend time, playing the game and trying to move up and down the floor. And incorporating shooting drills, after you had an intense session is good for our players because it gives them that real game feel of you're running up and down the court a few times and then you're left open for a wide open jump shot. And you got to have the endurance and the ability to be able to knock it down, just so you can be effective for your team and your team can be successful. So I do a lot of shooting within practice. I vary a lot of shooting drills. I never do the same shooting drill 2 days in a row. I vary them so much. I'll start off with a shooting drill before we even stretch just to get the guys warm. I believe in getting them warm before we stretch because I like to get their muscles kind of nice and warm. And then once they stretch, it won't be such a shock on the muscles. So we do a shooting drill to start off practice. We call it three down shooting, where we'll have three guys spread out on the baseline on each baseline. And we'll have, we might have, if we got 12 guys, that means we got six, but we got, two lines of three on one baseline,
yep,
two lines of three on the other baseline. And we'll have one group with the first group in one of the baseline lines. They'll have balls. The opposite group won't have balls. We'll send the group that doesn't have balls down. We'll put 6 minutes on the clock, send the group that doesn't have balls down. The guys that do have balls, they'll pass it to them, and we'll do catch and shoot for the first 2 minutes of the drill. So the group that passes it to the group that shoots, they'll go down on the other end, and they'll get a pass from the next group, where they'll get catch and shoot. And it just continues that way for 2 minutes. And then the next 2 minutes, we'll blow the horn at 4-minute mark, and then we'll do one dribble pull-ups. And we'll tell them, catch it outside the three, do a one dribble pull-up so they can gain space and be able to get a good look at a one dribble pull-up mid-range shot. And we'll do that for 2 minutes. And then the last 2 minutes, we will do shoot threes. And again, we make a lot of our drills competitive, even our shooting drills. So the goal in that drill, they got to do 120. They got to get 120 points, and you get 1 point for every shot you make. Mm-hmm. So you almost got to make, as a group, you got to make 20 per minute, mm-hmm, to either get to that goal.
Yep.
And so once we start in the season, we start at 120, but as we go along, we increase that goal. We start getting to 125 and 130.
Yep. Keep moving those goalposts.
Absolutely. And so we do that. We do what we call four-quarter shooting, where we, if we got six baskets, we got 12 guys, we put two guys in a basket, and, one guy's shooting and one guy rebounding. But when the guy shoots it, he goes and gets his own rebound, or the guy gets the rebound. I'm sorry. Once he shoots it, he goes to get his own rebound. The guy that was under the basket moves to a spot. He passes it to him. He shoots. He gets his own rebound. And the guy who was rebounded goes to a different spot and gets another shot. So they're constantly moving, getting shots. We do it for 4 minutes, and we set a goal. You know, if it's two guys, we say you got to get 30 makes between you. If it's three guys, because let's say you only got four baskets, mm-hmm. and you put three guys in a basket, you get, you know, your goal has to be 60 because you got three guys. But we set it for 4 minutes. We call it four quarter shooting. Really good shooting drill to get a lot of shots up from different areas because they can move to whatever area they want. We just always tell them, don't go to the same area twice in a row.
Yep.
You know, like move around, go to the corner, go to mirror, go to free throw line, go to short wing. And we do it twice in practice. The first time we do it all twos. Mm-hmm. The next time we do it all threes. So we vary up, you know, how we do it. And we usually keep up who gets the most makes. The goal is 60 for group of threes. The goal is 30 for a group of two. But we always see who makes it the most. And one thing we do with our competitive drills in practice is, you know, most times you say loser runs. And we usually do that for – but we also do winners runs.
We did that as well, yep.
Yeah, and it really motivates the guys to win because we tell them, like, if you're running, even though you're winning, you're getting better in the process.
Yep.
And so I got that from Jim Harbaugh, like, a while back when they were – I think they were playing in Super Bowl. And it was, like, really, really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did that as well, and yeah, that's the same way we sold it. Hey, you win, you get a chance to make yourself better. You get to make yourself a little bit more conditioned, you know, et cetera, you know. So, yeah, love it, Coach. Absolutely love it. So, Coach, if folks want to know more about you, they want to know more about Pace, all of that stuff. Obviously, USA Basketball is kind of, you know, speaks for itself. But what are some other ways if folks want to reach out to you and talk some hoops or want to know more about your program?
You know, I'm on a social media platform, Twitter. I'm Coach S. White, and same thing for Instagram. I'm Coach S. White. But they can also email me at Charmin, that's SHARMAN.White@paceacademy.org.
Yep. Awesome. Awesome. Charmin White, head boys basketball coach, Pace Academy in Georgia. Coach, it's been awesome having you on. I know how busy you have been. I really, really appreciate your time, and I hope you have enjoyed your maiden voyage here on a pen and a napkin.
Oh, man, it's been awesome, man. Thank you so much for having me. Totally honored, and I will continue to follow along and catch those little nuggets and be able to add them to whatever I do. Thank you for the content.
You bet. I appreciate it here, Charmin. Why don't you hold the line here just a second, and as we wrap up here again, Charmin White, he's done about everything you could possibly do as a high school coach. Won state championships, Nike game, USA basketball, Nike Hoop Summit, just done a terrific job in his career. So we of course want to thank our founding sponsor, COSAC Chiropractic. Again, if you're in the Omaha area and you're in need of chiropractic services, give Dr. Kevin and Dr. Heidi a holler. Follow us on Twitter at a pen and a napkin, download, rate, and review this pod. Email me a pen and a napkin at gmail.com if you have any questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas. Or you could go check out a pen and a napkin.com. It's a really good coaching website. I like it anyway, but I'm a little bit biased because I'm the one that made it. But it is what it is. So, again, for Charmin White, Marty Plum here. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.